sights to show you.
Saturday. We'll destroy ourselves Saturday.
Yeah, and then we'll recover Sunday and then have a 2-day hangover and we'll still be kind of fucked up on Monday.
Yep. That's just life.
That's your life. I'm not quite there yet.
Oh, you will be. You will be.
All right. Let's go ahead and get started after that cosmic horror.
Oh, I like it. That was
thanks.
Good.
Let's go ahead and jump right in. Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of the Horrible People's Podcast. I am your host, Alex Webster. With me, as always, is Anthony Fuentes.
Hey, hey.
Oh, you can fake it.
Yeah, no, I'm just emulating Krusty this whole episode. That's great.
Oh, no, that's not good either.
Sad clown, yeah.
Oh, no. So this week, our wonderful, wonderful listeners, we are tackling a genre that we've only briefly mentioned, maybe kind of in passing on this podcast. Mm-hmm. And we're doing that through one of my personal favorite horror films, The Void.
Oh, man, that's right. The Void from... I don't know, we'll get to it right now.
Yeah, we're about to get into it, but I know nothing about Anthony's take, and he doesn't sound too enthused, so...
I have opinions, for sure, but I am going to hold off on these while Britannia is clearly over there.
Yeah.
Just, like, wanting to talk about The Void.
Oh, it is, for sure, like, crazy cat hours.
Oh, absolutely. Now, speaking of the crazy cats, at IMDb offices.
Are you proud of yourself?
Writing
for
the
that
synopsis
one?
Here. Yeah, no, they're cats. Anyways, so shortly after delivering a patient to an understaffed hospital, a police officer experiences strange and violent occurrences seemingly linked to a group of mysterious hooded figures. Let me hold my fucking breath. Goddamn IMDb. Learn how to write one sentence. they, I think it's a challenge at this point.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
They're like, how many words can we... This baby can hold so many words.
Yeah. So that was good. This movie is directed by Stephen... written and directed by, of course, the team of Stephen Kostansky and Jeremy Gillespie.
Woo.
Wow, those are interesting names. Okay, guys.
Jeremy Gillespie, I believe, is one of the producers on The Witch, The Vavitch.
Okay. Both of these guys sound like characters from, like, The Big Bang Theory. Like, Stephen Kostansky and Jeremy Gillespie.
For sure. They got bullied.
They got bullied. They're really good at string theory, all that bullshit. Those two. But also, good job on The Witch. So, it's starring... Yeah, good work. It's starring Aaron Poole, Kenneth Welsh, Daniel Fathers, Kathleen Monroe, Ellen Wong, Evan Stern, Trish Rainone, Rain One, and Mick Byskov. So this
Meek
is...
Meek Byskov.
These
no,
actually
I don't know.
Sound
I'm
like...
I'm just making it sound...
Meek Byskov. Yeah, this sounds like an indie cast. Like, they just have, like, not movie star names, but not normal names.
Mm-hmm.
There's just somewhere in the middle
there. It's an indie as hell cast.
Definitely, definitely. Now, this one was released on September 22nd, 2016 at Fantastic Fest, and then a year or so later in April 2017 in Canada. And it was budgeted at less than $82,510. Really? That's cheap.
Yeah. We'll get into the logistics, but
that's cheap as fuck. Okay. Wow. That blew me away. And it was a hit. Holy shit. Kind of. $377,624.
Whoa. You threw million in there, dude.
$377,624. I always do that. I replace a million with a thousand, which is not good.
No.
I'm terrible on spreadsheets. It's terrible.
It's not good.
They're like, I thought we had more budget, guys.
How does
the Travelodge sound? Huh? No continental breakfast.
No continental breakfast. You guys are sharing beds. Get cozy.
It is next to a Taco Bell, though, so use that stipend right there, baby.
Taco Bell breakfast, let's go.
Breakfast contract.
Hey, dude, listen.
They're good.
I don't know if it makes me trashy, but I love a breakfast crunchwrap. I don't give a fuck.
Listen, this makes me the worst Mexican ever, but I fucking love Taco Bell.
I don't think it makes you the worst Mexican ever. I think it just gives you taste buds.
Yeah, I think it's a. I think it might just be like a Mexican American Chicano thing. Like it's one of
Maybe.
those foods that came in the coupon book every month, and we're like, "Yeah, family meal," and I'm like, "Good, one crunchy, one soft, no tomatoes," and that was like the kid meal right there. It was fucking perfect.
Interesting.
Now I get the tomatoes. Now I'm a big boy
Oh,
now.
you're a big boy. You'll eat the
Yeah,
tomatoes
I can eat
now?
the tomatoes. I can eat the
Wow.
tomatoes. Yeah.
They grow up so fast.
It only took like 30 years.
All right, moving right along, we're gonna jump right in to our old friend Cosmic Horror. Woohoo!
Yay!
I don't think we really gave it the Cosmic Horror treatment because we talked about it a little bit in Mandy.
Oh, okay. Yeah, definitely. But that was more of a Nicolas Cage thing.
Yeah. And if you want a Nicolas Cage Cosmic Horror, watch The Color Out of Space, which I'm sure we'll cover eventually.
That'd be fun. All right.
Yeah.
I'm with it.
But diving right in, cosmic horror, otherwise known as Lovecraftian horror, is a subgenre of horror fiction or weird fiction that emphasizes the horror of the feeling of the unknowable and incomprehensible over gore or other horror elements. So just all the weird shit.
Lot of horror. Okay.
Yeah.
Different kinds of horror just like blended.
I love cosmic horror. It's, oh gosh. So it is, of course, named after American author H.P. Lovecraft. His work emphasizes themes of cosmic dread, forbidden and dangerous knowledge, madness, non-human influences on humanity, religion and superstition, fate and inevitability, and the risks associated with scientific discoveries, all of which are now associated with, of course, Lovecraftian horror as a subgenre.
Oh, science.
Ah, science. It belongs in a museum. So the themes of Lovecraftian horror can be found in other media, notably horror films, horror video games, it's a big one,
Oh, yeah.
And comics. Not so much now, but like back in like pre-code type stuff, like oh, so cool. So,
Like the stuff that Stephen King used to like read as a kid, right?
yeah.
Yeah, that
Yes,
kind
yes, yes,
of.
yes.
Okay.
So the core themes and atmosphere of cosmic horror were laid out by Lovecraft himself in Supernatural Horror in Literature, his essay on gothic, weird, and horror fiction. And when I say weird, like I don't mean just like in the like adjective weird, like it's kind of like a genre, like weird fiction. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
No, that makes sense. That makes sense. Weird fiction. I've heard
Yeah.
that before.
Weird science. That's a
Yeah,
movie.
Danny Elfman. It's a good song. It's a good song. Matthew Michael Hall, baby.
Yes,
Yeah.
it's a great movie with a great title song.
Oh my gosh, the 80s. What a time.
What a time. A number of characteristics have been identified as being associated with Lovecraftian horror, such as fear of the unknowable and the or the unknown and unknowable. Which I just, it's so vast. It's like so general, but I'm just like, I don't know. I think it's fascinating.
What's in the secret sauce? I don't even want to try it. It's scary.
Okay, essentially.
It's unknowable, Alex.
It's unknowable. We could never know.
Can never
It's in
know.
a box locked away in some old person's like
Yeah.
mansion.
I know there's ketchup and I know there's mayonnaise, but what the fuck else is in that thing?
Relish.
Oh, bitch.
It's relish. It's my mom makes secret sauce. It's fucking delightful.
I don't know. I don't know. I still think it's a mystery.
All right. You hold on to that. Moving on.
I'm scared.
The fear and awe we feel when confronted by phenomena beyond our comprehension, whose scope extends beyond the narrow field of human affairs and boast cosmic significance,
Secret
aka, I was
sauce.
gonna say, if we follow the secret sauce,
God damn it, Alex.
here horror derives from the realization that human interest, desires, laws, and morality have zero meaning or significance in the universe at large. I love this when it comes to like cosmic horror, like aliens, where everyone assumes that aliens are going to like immediately follow the world's morality,
Oh, yeah.
or specifically American morality.
Well, think about it. Like, if bugs became intelligent life, Bug instincts are pretty terrifying.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's why bug monster movies become scary so fast, because it's like they're just doing what they want to do. It's just the fact that they're so tiny that people are just like, ha, 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 I'm big, you're little. Stomp, 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 stomp.
They, like, come over here, they're like, why are you guys not biting off your husband's heads?
Right.
I don't fucking get it.
Right, like, praying mantises. They're like, why aren't you biting off your man's head, like, immediately after sex? Like,
this is literally why the patriarchy exists. It's your fault.
You let this happen.
You let this happen. You guys develop tools. It's just within the wheelhouse.
You have a... Yeah. Use them. Anyway, I lost my spot. Okay. A contemplation of mankind's place in the vast, comfortless universe revealed by modern science, in which the horror springs from the discovery of the appalling truth of the universe.
Oh, Jesus. Okay, now we're getting a lot broader. It's hard to joke about that.
It's hard to bring in secret sauce, right?
Yeah, no, at that point, it's like, no, it's not that vast.
Right.
No.
And I'm sorry if you guys have to listen to my cat eating. She's being incredibly rude while I'm trying to speak. You just hear Britannia munching in the background, like, rah, rah. Yeah. And then also a naturalistic fusion of horror and science fiction in which presumptions about the nature of reality are eroded.
Ooh, that sounds real Cronenberg.
I was going to say, this is very Cronenberg-y, absolutely. Mm. Like, I immediately was like, ah, yes, The Fly.
That's what I was thinking, too. I'm like, oh, cool, Brundlefly time.
Hell yeah. That technological and social progress since classical times has facilitated the repression of an awareness of the magnitude and malignity of the macrocosm in which the human microcosm is contained. In other words, in case that made no sense to you,
yes.
A calculated repression of the horrifying nature of the cosmos as a reaction to its essential awfulness.
Okay, I like the second one without all the alliteration.
Well, macrocosm versus microcosm. Oh, I just love the word cosmos.
Yeah, I do agree. Like, there's very few instances in which the word cosmos is, like, off-putting. It's like, it provides wonder.
It provides wonder, and, like, I also have been into, astronomy my whole life. So, the cosmos are just comforting to me.
Yeah, except with the alien bugs.
Even the alien bugs, I think I would just have, like, a terrifying respect to just know to stay out of their fucking way. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's true. They come to Earth and be like, we've come to discover the secrets of your sauce.
Right. We want to discover your secret sauce. But
they're from the cosmos.
But if aliens were to come to planet Earth and say, we want to discover your secret sauce, they're going to think, humans are going to think they're thinking of something completely different.
Yeah, yeah. We're like, yeah, that's how we produce more humans. Like, what? You put in your burgers?
There's a total miscommunication there.
Mm-hmm. They fed us what? God, it's horrible.
I love
horrible
it.
Horrible to think about.
Okay. Having protagonists who are helpless in the face of unfathomable and inescapable powers. I love this one. Which reduce humans from a privileged position on Earth to insignificance and incompetence.
That just sounds like rich people stuff right there.
I feel like in such like a macro scale, it's like I find it so not like funny, but like kind of comforting, where it's just like everyone's helpless against like something so large and unknowable that like you could never fully comprehend it.
Like, I don't give a fuck about your business suit or your portfolio, sir.
Exactly.
This sun flare is going to destroy everything.
Yeah, Cthulhu does not give a fuck about what you got on your SATs. Like, you know what I mean? So, and then finally, a preoccupation with visceral textures, protean, semi-gelatinous substances, and slime, as opposed to other horror elements which focus on blood, bones, corpses, other yucky stuff. This is more gooey.
Yeah, I'll say goop and like like again, Cronenberg-y stuff for sure.
Yeah, I mean this is like semi-gelatinous, like yeah, the goo. It's goopy. I don't know.
So that's why jellyfish freak me out. Not their painful stings, like just jellyfish just as an existing thing.
Really?
They're just so
jellyfish freak you out?
Yeah, they're just like gross.
I love jellyfish. That's fascinating.
I think they look there's just like I think they make a good picture, but then like the idea of like their body.
This past weekend, you went to one of my favorite places in the entire world, and you saw some jellyfish. I'm guessing.
Yeah, no, they were cool when they were in the tank. But, like, I feel like if I ever saw one, like, every time I see them out of that context, I'm like, no.
Do you want to know something?
Stay in the tank.
Want to know something really funny and kind of gross?
Yeah.
So, in San Diego, there's, like, a migration of moon jellyfish. And I don't know if you learned this at your excursion to my favorite place ever. But moon jellyfish have stingers, but their stingers are not sharp enough or long enough to really penetrate human skin. So okay. you can hold them, like you can pick them up and they're not going to sting you.
Nice.
And so when I was a kid in San Diego, there would be like migrations of moon jellyfish and you could go and like pick up the moon jellyfish. They were probably dead at that point, but like you got to like literally walk around holding a jellyfish. It was pretty sick.
That is sick.
You're like, it is, you're disgusting.
See, and with my idea, like with how we know about humans and like the cosmic scale of everything, I'm like, you know, there's some frat dude that was like, look guys, I got a jellyfish on my dick, like some shit like that.
Well, here's the thing,
totally
also
happened.
I'm from San Diego, which has like 5 colleges, like,
yes. You know. Oh, I know, and one of them's the state school. You know they get down. You know they're fucking those.
Oh yeah, yeah. When I was about to graduate high school, SDSU had a herpes outbreak.
Oh no!
I believe there was a bad herpes problem at SDSU the year that I graduated high school, and I was like, ooh.
That don't go away.
No, it does not go away. So I was just like, well, I will be going to UC Riverside, which I don't know how much better that was, but.
Yeah, no, I'm from Riverside, no herpes yet, so. We're good.
Hey.
Even in LA, good, yeah.
So far, so good. So far, so good, man. Let's not jinx it, shall we?
No, definitely not. Thank you, Trojan Raw, baby.
and that's your PSA to everyone listening today. Wrap it before you tap it.
Yeah, I like it. I like that's good. Don't be spreading that secret sauce.
Damn it. So, moving right along. So, from the 1950s onwards, in the era following Lovecraft's death, Lovecraftian horror truly became a subgenre, not only fueling direct cinematic adaptations of Poe and Lovecraft, because Edgar Allan Poe is also attached somehow to this, like, weird genre.
Mm-hmm. Very gothic.
There are some gothy vibes, for sure. Mm-hmm. But also providing the foundation upon which many horror films of the 1950s and 60s were constructed, and this goes well into the 2020s.
Oh, definitely.
And yes, we cannot talk about Lovecraft without acknowledging he was a fucking weirdo, but also cosmic horror as a genre has moved beyond a racist writer from the 20s.
Oh, only whites go to space. Racist writer from
the 20s. Yeah, if anyone wants to be truly shocked beyond belief, Google what Lovecraft named his cat.
Oh, no, I'm doing it now. I'm going to get my genuine reaction.
Hold on.
H.P. Lovecraft... cat name is the literal first thing that comes up next to the name. Ah! Oh, had to be a dark cat, huh? Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So, he was a fucking racist.
Oh my lord. What the? It's like more the racist than you can say just one word, but the fact that it's two makes it a little more. Oh, boy. Okay. Cool, dude. Thanks for the monsters, you fucking monster.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. So, that I'm glad I was able to do that to Anthony on this
episode.
That's
so interesting. Okay, cool. It's fun. Okay, for anybody that's into politics, if you remember who was the guy, Secretary of Nuclear, the Texas, Rick Perry, his private residence was named very similarly.
What?
Oh, you never heard about that?
No.
Oh, yeah. Hold on, I'm gonna look. So, Rick Perry, land name. What was it? Okay. It's racially charged name. Here you go, Alex.
You just texting it to me or what?
I'm gonna text it to you right now. Very much like Lovecraft here. It's the Washington Post, so you know it's true. Sometimes.
It's gotta be true. Oh.
Uh-huh.
Oh, no.
Yeah, dude. That's a Lovecraftian ass fucking land name right there.
Oh, my God!
Yeah. Wow. Oh, America.
Oh, my God!
America. I know. And that guy wanted to be president.
I was gonna say, didn't Rick Perry run had to wait, for like, president?
Yeah, dude. He should have waited 5 years, dude. Wouldn't right in front of the ticket.
Whoa.
Oh, boy. Actually, no, not with these midterms. Bye-bye. Yeah. Bye-bye. Anyways. So,
wow. Anyway, move on to, yeah.
Yeah, a land a little less racist.
Possibly,
so,
yeah.
Canada.
Yes.
Possibly. In some parts.
In some ways, somehow.
In the year 2000. Mm-hmm. In the year 2000, the Canadian film groups referring to themselves as Astron 6 began creating comedic horror films.
Fucking dweebs. There?
I know, dude. I'm like, dude, fucking might as well call themselves the Wedgie Six, dude. So,
the Swirly Six.
The Swirly Six. I like it. Oh, dude. With the Wedge Crew? Yeah. So their films included Manborg, Father's Day, and The Editor. And, of course, The Void differed from the previous films being serious in tone, which led the group to not present it under the Astron 6 name. Oh, yeah, I don't like it. But Jeremy Gillespie, one of the members, was initially working at a production studio on a floor below where Guillermo del Toro was working on the unfinished film At the Mountains of Madness, which he still hasn't made, has he?
No, so this is we're about to get into it, but it's an H.P. Lovecraft adaptation, and it's famously in development hell for ever.
I remember. Oof. Poor guy. Anyway, so he just did Pinocchio, though. I heard it's pretty good. But recalling hearing him state that he wanted to do an H.P. Lovecraft film in a way that had been done before is, you know, what he kind of picked up from this experience. So, of course, after hearing this, Gillespie felt that this, quote, sort of got the wheels in my mind working, trying to think of what that might be. So that was sort of where the imagery was born. All of this stuff relating to pyramids, triangles, is left ambiguous for the audience to interpret as they would intentionally. All right, end quote. There you go, buddy. A little confusing, but okay. Gillespie and Kostanski managed to crowdfund the money they needed to build the practical creatures that appear on the screen effects. Wow, they did...
Yeah, so that's what I was waiting for you to get to. They crowdfunded this movie. That's why the budget was so, like, specific and small.
Well, shit, very little, if any, CG was actually used in the making of The Void, and I gotta say, I'm impressed. Way to go, guys. Like, this looks way more expensive than what it actually is.
This movie was, like, duct taped together, as we'll find out in mere moments.
I mean, one location. That's kind of gives it away right there, but...
Yeah, but also, when we were watching this movie, who I was watching it with was just, like, Halloween 2 vibes, like...
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm down.
There was a lot of, like, as we were watching, it was just like, this is a reference to this. This is a reference to this.
Oh my God, dude. Michael Myers would have changed this movie completely.
I don't know. I mean, Michael Myers, I think, would have, I don't think he would have made it against the tentacle monsters, but.
I don't know. He's pretty stabby and quiet. We'll see. Well, I don't know. What's the hypothetical thing about? But other assistance came from the team working on David Ayer's Suicide Squad, which was shooting in Toronto at the time. And, of course, Gillespie served as assistant art director and Costanzi as a special effects makeup artist on that particular film, which led to members of the special effects team on Suicide Squad to work on The Void. They got, okay, all right, I can respect that too. Because it's not a terrible-looking movie. It's just
a terrible movie.
Yeah, it's just really bad.
It's really bad. It's so bad.
But Killer Croc, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So Gillespie later declared The Void as a difficult production, noting that, quote, every single thing was the biggest challenge. It was a soul-crushing nightmare. Everybody was pushed to the limit on this movie. And one ray of hope we got was the cast, which came together at the last second. They were very easy to deal with, end quote. Okay, buddy. Yeah, they definitely read lines. So
they certainly said words.
Yes, yes. The hospital used in the film was actually a former high school, obvious. Sir James Dunn Colgate Vocational School in Sault Ste. Marie, Ontario, Canada. God damn Canada.
I know. Anthony struggled through every word in that Canadian ass sentence.
I can read like Japanese names, fucking Latino names like a motherfucker, but give me this like Canadian religious shit and just know. I'm like Colgate, St. Paul, Marie, fucking Ontario. So.
Collegiate.
Anyways, the school had been closed for a while and was demolished not long after filming was complete. Just let them blow it up. Let them blow it up.
Yeah.
Yeah, they would have taken the work for you. Give them dynamite.
Yeah, right. I like that they're just like, oh no, before you blow it up, we're gonna film a movie here. It's a hospital too.
Yeah. But this all makes sense, right? Just give us 3 weeks. 3 weeks.
That's all we need.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So that's pretty much it in terms of production. Other than it just being declared a difficult production, there was very little I could find. But
totally fine by me. Let's get to the meat and potatoes of this one.
Yeah. The Void had its world premiere at Fantastic Fest on September 22nd, 2016. The film received its Canadian premiere at the Toronto After Dark Festival on October 17th. Screen Media Films negotiated a deal with XYZ Films and CAA for both theatrical and video demand day and date release of The Void in the United States on April 7th, 2017.
All right, way to go, Canada, making movies.
Sure. Yeah. On Rotten Tomatoes, The Void holds a 78% approval rating based on 73 reviews and an average rating of 6.1 out of 10. The site's critical consensus states, quote, The Void offers a nostalgic rush for fans of low-budget 1980s horror and legitimate thrills for hardcore genre enthusiasts of all ages, unquote.
Okay, interesting. This came out around the same time as Stranger Things, huh?
2014? Yes.
Yeah,
I think so. Season one?
Mm-hmm. Can definitely feel like the
Stranger Things season one. 2016. This came out 2 years before.
No, same time?
Same time, yeah.
Same time?
For some reason, I was like, 2014? Oh, same time.
I love it that all the 80s filmmakers, or the people born in the 80s were like, finally, we can make movies now.
Interesting that you'd compare this to Stranger Things, but also when they're in, like, when they're scoring this bitch, they're like, more synth! More synth! Yeah.
Wait, did you ever see the latest season? Season 4?
No, I have not.
Oh. It's a lot like The Void.
Interesting.
Like a lot. Trust me.
Interesting.
I think worth the watch, despite being season 2 and 3 kind of sucking balls. 4,
well,
up there.
Okay. I know someone who is probably listening to this episode who is very mad at that statement.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
God, I mean, but like, they really suck balls out.
Not 2 and 3 being shitty seasons. It's more like, because, like, okay, so I watched The Void with my friend Danny, and he hates Stranger Things.
Oh, man.
Hates Stranger Things. Love The Void. And I'm just like, I like that you made that comparison, because I just find it funny. It amuses me.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Definitely give it a watch. Anyway,
interesting.
Sorry.
No, it's okay. So Fangoria gave the film a positive review, specifically praising that, quote, practical effects are not obscured, not glimpsed partially through a flashing light or shaky handycam. They're showcased front and center with the confidence of a team that knows their monsters have more weight and impact than the myriad CGI scares that have become the standard in modern horror, unquote. And that it was a film that, quote, demands multiple viewings, unquote.
Okay. Where's the Fangoria?
Anthony is biting his tongue.
No, I mean, like, this sounds like a 2016 review. Like, they're pissed off. They have, like, grievances from the air. They're like, fucking no shaky cam. Way to go, buddy.
Yeah, or the flashing light thing. Mm-hmm, I mean, the CGI was starting to become, like, a common gripe where it's just like, too much CGI.
Yeah, and it was, like, not good.
Yeah.
Like, definitely not good. Mm-hmm.
Kim Newman of Screen Daily compared the film to previous works, BioCop from ABC's Of Death 2 and Manborg, stating that the directors, quote, remain in pistache mode, but tone down the humor to try for serious suspense and Lovecraftian horror with a pleasing reliance on memorably gruesome physical effects rather than CGI. Once again.
I mean, good special effects, honestly. So absolutely. I can see why people are like, give them more praise and money, please.
And then meanwhile, the Globe and Mail gave the film 2.5 stars out of 4, calling the plot hard to follow, and that the creatures in the film are, quote, low-lit, which probably has more to do with budget realities than aesthetic choice, and that the film was, quote, unsettling and not jokey at all. The hell of the void will be heaven to some, unquote.
Okay, interesting. I think, of course, the low-lit does help out with the effects, but also, it's a vibe.
It's a horror film. Like, yeah. I don't know, like, very rarely, unless it's, like, Midsummer, like, it's not gonna be like, here is a brightly lit horror film.
Mm-hmm. Mm, I'm with it.
Yeah. And then, of course, Letterboxd is here to show us that it's not November without an Alex Webster special. The Void has a 3.1 out of 5 average rating out of 45,000 reviews.
That's so interesting. That's a lot of reviews.
In comparison to what we've covered, I thought it was kind of,
I don't know. It depends. Because, I mean, it's definitely not mainstream. So I think for a non-mainstream movie, that's actually quite a bit.
I would say it's a cult favorite for the genre, because I've heard a lot about this movie even before I watched it.
It's been in a lot. Oh my god, somebody in downtown. It's been a lot of like Reddit discussions and like horror discussions, and so I've seen it referenced a lot. So it's interesting to see 45K. This movie's way more successful overall than I anticipated it would be. Yeah. So that's kind of interesting.
So, kicking it off, Jay with 2.5 stars says, script, $200. Sound design, $450. Camera work, $800. Practical creature effects, $153,600. Likeable characters, $50. Eh? Someone who's good at the economy, please help me budget this. My family is dying.
Oh, pre-inflation numbers 2. Oh, shit.
I love that review. User PD187 with 2.5 stars, quote, hope y'all enjoyed my Scream fanfic where Officer Dewey meets some Hellraisers and the Event Horizon.
Okay, that's a good one. I would not expect that creativity from somebody named PD187. Jesus. Officer Dewey
meets some Hellraisers and the Event Horizon. That is exactly how I've described this movie. I'm like, it's like if Event Horizon meets like something.
Yeah, no, definitely, definitely. Like with that, Cenobites without the S&M for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So Matt Lynch with 3 stars, quote, one of your more enjoyable New Wave Carpenter knockoffs, plus a dash of The Beyond. Way too much handheld, but it's a fair trade for some excellent gore special effects, unquote.
Hmm. They are good.
Yeah. And then finally, Dawson Joyce, who just gets it with 4 stars, quote, a delightfully blood-soaked Lovecraftian journey through cosmic hell that pays great tribute and homage to the great classic horror films of old. Jeremy Gillespie and Stephen Kostansky's The Void also offers a surprising amount of well-handled character drama to complement its great John Carpenter-esque retro vibe, stunning visuals, and spectacular practical creature and gore effects, unquote.
All right, Dawson Joyce, don't have to blow both of them. Oh, that's an interesting take. Okay, I can see some of the points, for sure.
Are we going to fight about this, Anthony?
I mean, I don't know, we'll find out. We'll find out in a moment. But we do have a plot, though, don't we?
I think we do.
Oh, shit. Well, we will see these thoughts in real time. I'm kicking this one off. So, James flees from a farmhouse and escapes into the woods. A screaming woman tries to follow, but is wounded, by a gunshot, and this was actually pretty scary, if I remember correctly.
The beginning to this movie is freaky.
Very horror.
Yes. Sure. Lying on the ground, this woman is doused with gasoline and set on fire by two men who we later come to know as Vincent and Simon.
Hmm. Douche and doucher. There we go. So, Deputy Sheriff Daniel Carter, Officer Dewey, is on duty, sitting in his patrol car when he finds James crawling along the road and rushes him to the local hospital, which has been largely abandoned following a fire where his estranged wife, Allison Fraser, works as a nurse. Abandoned hospital? Nothing ever goes wrong in an abandoned hospital.
Following a fire? Hell no. So at the hospital, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, yeah, okay, the thing that I actually help people with, like a fire, we're actually going to just, no attention.
None. Mm-mm. So at the hospital are Dr. Richard Powell, Nurse Beverly, intern Kim, pregnant patient Maggie, her grandfather Ben, and patient Cliff, with the staff at the hospital working as a skeleton crew.
Okay. Those are names. There's a lot of names.
Yes.
A lot of characters.
Which is crazy because it's like such like a small, like, it's like a bottle episode of a movie.
It definitely is. A bottle episode with fodder, which is interesting. So Daniel discovers an entranced Beverly murdering Cliff, her face flayed of skin, which is actually, again, a very good visual. And Beverly moves toward Daniel, who shoots her dead. And of course, Daniel collapses due to a seizure. And experiences a rather strange vision.
Hmm. So this kind of yada yadas through a bit, but it's pretty much all character establishing stuff. Oh man, yeah. But this scene where Beverly is absolutely apeshit, and then he has to shoot her, and then he's just like, "Well, I'm gonna go throw up now."
Yeah, I like that he's affected by having to do that.
Yeah.
And everybody's like, "What the fuck, man?" And he's like, "Dude, did you not see the shit?" Like,
yeah, absolutely. She cut off her own face. State Trooper Mitchell enters the hospital to collect James after discovering the bloody scene at the farmhouse. Daniel goes outside to call in Beverly's death from his patrol car, but is confronted by a robed cultist who wounds him.
Yeah, and we didn't really mention this, but these cultists are, like, in a white robe, but with, like, this upside-down triangle face black
think
thing.
Like, KKK uniforms. But with, like, a triangle over their face.
Oh, yeah. Think of the Klan and Squid Game.
Yeah.
In one thing.
That is exactly what you need to picture. You need to picture KKK meets Squid Game uniform.
Klan Games.
Oh, no.
That'd be a great
it's
TV.
It's Klan Games, but games, like, there's a silent K in front of games.
No, okay. No, Klan Games would be, like, the same plot as Squid Game. Except, obviously, with minorities and the Klan.
It's not good.
But Lovecraftian bullshit happening right at the end.
Oh,
like, just really bring it together
way.
Yeah,
I fuck with that.
Yeah, Klan Game. A script going to be developed by the Horrible People podcast.
Oh, great. I don't want that.
Oh, don't cancel us. That's pretty bad. So, okay, Klan Games. That was fun. Anyways, Officer Daniel here manages to return to the hospital as the cultists around the building. James, Daniel, and Mitchell find Beverly's corpse has transformed into a really fucking gruesome tentacled creature.
I love this thing.
Okay, this is the part where I was like, oh, what is this movie now? It's like, holy shit, this is like a 180 from like what I thought it was gonna be, so
really?
Way to go.
You weren't weirded out when Beverly was stabbing a man in the face?
Well, that's still like within a type of horror that's not like a creature feature.
That's
it
fair.
Could be like a culty, weird kind of like almost Midsommar-y kind of horror, but not like obviously it's not acted the same way. But
yeah.
There was like, it didn't give me creature feature vibes.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So, meanwhile, Vincent and Simon enter the lobby and hold the entire group at gunpoint, demanding to get to James. James takes Maggie, the pregnant woman, hostage to protect himself, and in the ensuing, I guess, struggle, stabs Powell, the doctor, who falls to the floor.
I remember this whole scene was kind of haphazard. I'm like, gee, and nobody talking to each other?
Everyone's just like, all right, calm down. Like, they're talking to, like, a feral cat.
Yeah. I know there's cults and monsters and shit going on right now, but also, like, I'm gonna kill this bitch. I'm gonna do it.
Yeah. Speaking of plan games, this whole movie, because I this whole time when we were watching it, Danny called Simon neo-Nazi kid because he's just like, he just looks like a neo-Nazi.
Yeah, no, it definitely looks like a extra on American History X for sure.
Which sucks because he's like the one good character in this whole movie, but he does have like a face where I'm just like, oh,
that's like, don't got any
mm-hmm. suspicious tattoos?
Mm-hmm. Don't be putting a sign on the 405 supporting Kanye, buddy. Don't do it.
Don't do it.
So,
where were you on January 6th?
It's like on January 6th, he actually stopped like a Lovecraftian monster from coming out of the bowels of like the Capitol building. Like, he saved the day. He's like, he created a riot so we can get in there. And we can stop the end of the world.
God damn it. That's the second. That's the Void 2.
Yeah.
Like, Insurrection Boogaloo.
Existential Insurrection. Bam. Jesus. Oh, we're good.
We're on a roll.
Yeah, I know. When we get to do clan jokes, we're very sharp. So, the Beverly creature appears and takes Mitchell, its tentacles penetrating his body in some real, real, like, we'll get you censored in Japanese internet for sure. So, yeah, Vincent and Simon kill the Beverly creature and regroup with the others in the lobby. Setting Mitchell's body on fire, the good old Resident Evil method of zombie killing. So I like that.
I thought it was very effective.
That's how you stop the Crimson Head zombies from coming back. You gotta burn them.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. I'm just agreeing with you. So Vincent and Simon accompany Daniel to retrieve a shotgun from his patrol car, while Allison ventures into the basement to collect medical supplies for delivering Maggie's baby. This was after about, I want to be accurate here, about a, I don't know, 4-hour conversation where they're arguing about, you shouldn't go to the basement without me. And then she's just like, I can go by myself. It's perfectly safe in this hospital where there's monsters. And Daniel's like,
whatever, I'll do what I want.
Yeah, exactly. And then they turn into South Park characters. I forgot to mention that. And Daniel's like, I'm going to go to my car and get a shotgun, and then I will take you to the basement.
And they're like, does everybody have their side quests? Okay, right? Perfect.
Let me complete my side quest to get my shotgun. Yeah, this is like in Resident Evil where you have to perform a side mm-hmm. quest to get your shotgun.
They're like, yep, you get 50 XP after this one, and because you're going to the downstairs area, if you make it out, 200 XP. More dangerous quest. Higher level.
Sure. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
God. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah. It's interesting.
This was Allison making the stupidest decision of the entire movie, which sucks, because she seemed like such a smart girl up until this point.
Yeah, you'd think, like, she'd have her head on a swivel with, like, the monsters and the clan and, like,
yeah, we got the clan.
People you can't trust.
Yeah. No, you can't trust monsters. You can't trust the clan. It's very, yeah.
Yeah, it's a lot. Yeah. So, Powell manages to capture Allison. Daniel and Vincent go to search for her and find photographs and files indicating Powell was, in fact, the cult's leader.
He was the leader all along. So, yeah, he's the freaking leader the whole time. Mm-hmm. And he has these, like, creepy little, like, Polaroids. It's very Silence of the Lambs.
Yeah, it's really kind of a, I don't know. I feel like they kind of like threw this at the audience. You're like, ha ha! And we're like, oh shit, okay, well, creepy?
Thanks.
Makes sense? All right.
Thank you for this.
Third act time, huh? Okay.
Thank you for this snack. So Powell phones Daniel, taunting him and mentioning the vision Daniel experienced while unconscious as a way of like, hey, you saw some shit, didn't you? And that's it. He didn't do anything with it. He was just like, you saw some shit.
It's like, listen, I understand through this dimension you can be reached via your subconscious, but I am going to use a phone. So.
It's really inconvenient to wait for someone to, like, hit their head, fall unconscious, mm-hmm. like,
and know, they'll still count asleep. As minutes.
Yeah.
Still count as minutes.
They still rack up. They don't roll over, you know. Yeah, so yeah, if you don't use them every calendar millennia, they don't roll over.
I mean, think about it. With, like, the time frame and us being in the middle of nowhere, that's roaming for sure.
Totally.
Roaming charges, hands down. Mm-hmm.
Fuck.
Oh, terrible. Oh, so Kim and Ben stay with Maggie while Daniel, Vincent, and Simon interrogate James. James, then, explains that Powell has the power to transform people.
Da, da, da. Okay, so this is, like, the most, like, wimpy interrogation scene ever. Because he's just like, I'm gonna bust your hand with a hammer. And then...
Yeah!
And then he's just like, no! Da, da, da. And it's so... It's quite silly, but I love it dearly.
It is funny. It's like, give us any kind of explanation for the shit at all. Okay, I'll tell you stuff.
Right. It's just like, give us an exposition dump. Give it to us right now.
We're gonna need a third act, you piece of shit.
Give us the information we need to get into the third actor, so help me!
You will lose a hand, but isn't that, it's gonna cost us money for special effects, we'll do it anyways!
And then you just hear a loud bang, and then it just, like, they just, like, psyched him out, and I was just like, I wanted to see his hand broken!
Just one hand, dude, he didn't need the other hand, we're good.
Yeah, it was his left hand, he just needed his right, it's fine.
Exactly.
Okay, so the three men force James to come with him downstairs, and again he's just like, no, I don't want to, I know what's down there, but what, yeah. They're just like, you're coming with us. Allison meanwhile regains consciousness on an operating table, where Powell explains that he has found a way to defy death after the loss of his daughter Sarah. Having flayed off his face, Powell shows Allison that something now grows inside of her, which frankly terrifying.
Yeah. Pretty much, like, where a lot of the money goes, for sure. Like, I feel like pregnant bellies moving with actual babies in them already freaks me out. Like, you know, gross monstrous babies that can stretch it even more.
It's even extra, worse. No, point in the movie when she's just like, don't do anything to me, and he's like, I already have, or whatever. My knees were to my chin. Like, I was so, like, I, like, immediately pulled my legs up to my, like, to my chest. I was just like, I don't like this at all. I'm deeply uncomfortable. Yeah.
Again, pregnant women in peril, like, fucks me up a little bit. Like, that's one thing in movies that I'm always like, ooh, no. No, no, no. But also, yeah, it really does. But also, I like that we also get one more escort mission with fucking James.
Yeah.
They're still, like, in, like, objective, like, the objective categories haven't been checked off yet. Mm-hmm. So, Daniel, Vincent, Simon, and James find a hidden area in the basement and end up surrounded by deformed corpses brought back to life. One of the creatures kills James as the other three men get separated because James has served his purpose in the plot.
Right.
No more girls for you, buddy.
Bye. Meanwhile, as Maggie enters labor, Kim hesitates to perform a C-section because she's an intern and she doesn't know how.
You want me to get this interdimensional demon out, but I don't know if I can actually have the skill set to make this work, buddy.
Yeah, she's like, I don't get paid enough for this. And they're like, you're an intern, you don't get paid at all. And this is America. But anyway, as Ben, the grandfather, pleads with Kim, Maggie stands and slits his throat, revealing that she is carrying old man Powell's child.
Oh, fucking A. Yeah.
This is where shit really goes off the rails.
And you can tell this is pre-Roe v. Wade getting overturned, because they're just freely like, hey, we can just do this.
Yeah.
Get rid of the child. That's fine.
Well, and it's also like the whole thing where, like, they're just like, please don't kill my baby. And it's just like, okay, this is really, like, all right. You're also the least convincing pregnant woman I've ever seen. But
that's true, though, right? Like, super the least convincing. I'm like, dude, are you pregnant? Or are you just, like, working at a Target? Like, what's... your demeanor, it screams, like, you know, red shirt and khakis.
Right. And I think, like, part of that was, like, they're looking for someone who looked innocent. But I'm like, no, it's too much. Too much in that in that direction.
Yeah. No, she's just... All she needs is a name tag. It's fine.
Yeah.
So, Kim hides as cultists enter the building and Maggie leaves. Daniel finds Allison in the operating room. Pregnant.
This was sick. I like this. This was so he sees her like normal, right? Mm-hmm. And then it like kind of like he like snaps back to reality. Oh, there goes gravity, right? And
he loses himself.
And
yes.
He loses himself
in the moment.
And there's all these fucking tentacles like coming out of this poor like eight like woman, and it's. Ugh. Terrifying. Like, that transition was incredible.
Yeah, and then what you didn't see, actually, is the cutaway, is because there was vomit on his sweater already.
Mom's spaghetti.
Yeah.
He's nervous.
He's really just, he's very calm, and I think he's ready. your turn?
Yeah, it's my turn. Oh god. So he sees a tentacled creature extending from her body, and Powell's voice, like, ominously and, like, omnipotently speaks to Daniel, who attacks his wife's mutated remains with an axe, and he's just like, "You'll never see her again," and he's just like, "She's already dead! Hack!"
These tentacles don't mean shit!
You're right. This isn't a Japanese pornography film, hack!
Oh, that's funny. It's like, "Send me my head!"
It suddenly the screen narrows. It becomes, like, there's anime music in the background.
I know. He's, like, as he lifts the axe, it's, like, the demon background's, hunter. Like, the lines.
No, yeah, exactly. The demon hunter, like, sad music starts playing.
Oh, great, stuff. Jesus Christ, okay. Anytime tentacles get hacked off, I'm always like, they gotta do the close-up. They did the close-up. All right, let's go. It's
We're
movie
done.
Time.
Yeah.
Movie time. Anyway, so Daniel is transported into a morgue room with a glowing triangle on the wall, kind of like the cult. Powell's voice tells Daniel that he found the ability to conquer life and death. And Powell promises that Daniel can have his child back if he is willing to die first. Good rule dump.
Yeah, I was going to say, it doesn't seem like a good idea. I'm just going to come out and say it.
You're like, die or die. What conditions do I win in this scenario?
You don't. So Maggie appears and stabs Daniel. Powell appears skinless. No skin. He gave himself the Frank treatment, mm-hmm. and partly mutated in front of the triangle as Maggie kneels before him.
Yeah, this is kind of Stranger Things. Watch season 4. You get some parallels for sure on this one. But Powell recites an incantation before the triangle as a now frightened Maggie's torso explodes, birthing the Sarah creature, which this is horrifying. This whole thing is
See it, though. It's like hidden behind a gurney, but we just hear like flesh sounds.
Yeah, but exploding pregnant belly is a visual that, again, it is... Yeah.
Oh, it's scary for you? Is that scary to you, Anthony Fuentes?
Yeah, you know, because, you know, it's already been, like, 6 weeks or whatever, and honestly, it's against the law, so they should really... Ay, ay, ay.
Jeez. Yeah, this is, you know, if you think about it, it is kind of a Roe v. Wade message.
A little bit, right? With Lovecraftian horror and, you know, yeah. Talk about existence. So.
Sure.
In dimensions, yeah.
Yeah.
There's a lot going on.
There's a lot. So Vincent and Simon arrive and battle the Sarah creature, and it overcomes Vincent. But in a sad little tender moment, he covers himself in isopropyl alcohol and allows Simon to set them both on fire with a flare.
Oh my god, this scene. It was so like, I'm like, dude, he's getting fucking destroyed right now. Just take him out.
Yeah, he's dead. He's already dead. Mm-hmm. Even if the creature disappeared instantly, he would be dead from his flesh wounds in like 5 seconds.
Yeah, there's no way he's getting out of it, and he's like begging you, like, dude, put me on fire. I am in pain. I can't possibly be in worse pain. He's like, dude, it's fire. It might be worse. He's like, fuck it. It'll end this quicker, right? And it's like a weird, like, negotiation of pain.
Right, like, what's worse?
Mm-hmm. Oh, and of course, Powell tells Daniel he can be with Allison if he stops resisting and lets go. Of course, Daniel refuses and tackles him, leading both men to tumble into the void. I love that. He's like, under my conditions, you can get everything you want. He's just like a tight end, just like, ah! Sacked your ass, bitch!
You're coming down with me!
That's the one thing you don't know about Mr. Powell. Is that I was a really, really good linebacker, you bitch.
How do you think I became a cop? Me! So, meanwhile, the Sarah creature pursues Simon, who escapes and is teleported back to the hospital to reunite safely with Kim. Somehow these two idiots survived.
Right? I'm just like, of all the characters, I would assume fodder, for sure.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Immediately, when in the beginning of the movie, I was like, she dies, he dies, and I've seen mm-hmm. this movie before.
Right?
And I was so sure that they both died, and I was very wrong.
You're like, how do these forgettable characters make it to the end?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, of course, Daniel and Allison are shown holding hands in another world, beneath a black pyramid in the full spectrum of the entire CGI budget of this movie.
Holy shit. Okay, but also, like, big props to this, to, like, the special effects department, because this movie does not look like a $83,000 movie.
It don't look cheap. Really doesn't. And honestly, like, yeah, I don't know. Like, this last part, I was like, shit, they're putting some money in this one. Yeah, but now that you mentioned the price. Mm-mm.
Yeah. And it's the last shot of the film, too. And then and you know what? My dumb practical ass, like, the second I saw that, I'm like, what are they going to do? Like, build a house? Start a life?
Yeah.
What are they going to do? They're fucked. This is their afterlife? I'd freak out.
No, they have no idea when they're going to die, what their actual new bodies are like.
If they're even dead. Like, I mean, they look the same, but I'm like, are they the same forever? Is this just a new world? Like, I don't know what's going on. I mean, also, like, again, I'm thinking too much about it, but still, I have questions.
There's a lot of ambiguity. So, which, yeah.
I'm trying to get better with. My therapist told me I need to get better with Shades of Grey, but I suck at it.
Yeah, no, I think, what do you call it? This is one of those instances where I'm with you, though. It might have been a little too ambiguous. Because there's really, like, more of an act I think they can pull off. Or at least some kind of, like, dialogue or something.
Even, like, a line where he's like, in my hell dimension, where my slaves live. Like, it could have been anything.
Yeah.
Where it rains cotton candy for all I fucking care. It could have been anything.
Mm-hmm. Even title the movie. Like, where are we? The void.
Right.
Damn.
Right.
Something.
They tumble. The men tumble into the void. And I'm like, ah. They said the thing. So, anyway, that's the movie.
The void. We did it.
The void. We did it. We made it. So now we can run through some discussion, because somehow that took way longer than I thought it was going to.
That was fun. Yeah, we got a good Eminem reference and, you know, the Klan shit, so I think
we're okay. And we got to mention the universe's favorite rapper, Marshall Mathers.
That's true. Slim Shady himself.
Slim Shady, yes. Mm-hmm. All right, so quickly, thoughts on The Void?
It's okay.
God damn it.
Okay, so I don't know, I'm kind of conflicted, because now that we ran through it, I like it a little more. At first, it was weird, because it felt like a movie that I thought looked good. Like, really good. But it didn't feel like a movie.
Okay.
It felt like I made jokes about, like, now we're in the third act. But honestly, this whole movie felt like the third act to a much larger story that we just didn't get any of that, those details. Like, none.
Yeah.
So it was like that, and that made it feel like if they ever do, like, an actual, like, good Resident Evil movie, it would be paced like this movie. Like, this movie seems like a video game brought out to life with bitchin' special effects and video game acting. Like, that's kind of what it felt like. Like, the acting itself, like, now that I know that they did comedy horror before, I can see it, because they didn't, like, people talked and, like, exerted their voices, like, they...
Like, they were gonna tell a joke?
Yeah, like, they're ready to say some one-liners, but, like, no one-liners. Like, not one joke in this whole fucking movie. But they talked and, like, enunciated in a way that I'm like, they want to say a joke. Like, they really want to say a joke.
Yeah, these are also all indie actors, so.
Yeah, Canadian indie actors. So they really went, like, again, I can't imagine they spent too much on the cast. But, again, I really admire, like, there's not a movie that, like, looks and feels like this, which is kind of makes me give it more points. Because there is, like, there's a gruesomeness to it.
Mm-hmm.
There's a creativity in the creature design. There is, I don't know, a lot. It's bold that it wants to, like, give you as little information as possible. And it's like, this is just happening. And I'm like, oh, okay. What happens next? Something way different. Cool.
Something weird.
Something a little weird. Okay, that also wasn't explained, but you know what? That's a lot of blood now. Like, that's kind of the pace of the movie. But it is, again, I can't call it, like, bad. I wouldn't call it bad. I would just say it is really unconventional, and I don't think I was ready for it. But it is, like, it's a video game. It's such a video game, but I would play the fuck out of the video game. That's kind of how I feel.
Yeah, I would say the vibes, especially the hospital in the first, like, 30 minutes or so of the movie, are very, very horror movie-esque.
Yeah, sure. Okay, that first part of the movie is super horror driven, yeah. Until we get creatures and then we get like dimensions and like other stuff coming in there. But yeah, again, I don't know what it is. It's not conventional. And I think maybe it made it really hard for me to get attached to any of the characters or understand their journeys too much. But I don't know. It was hard to look away. I was looking up a lot. It was nice. So that's where I land on it. I don't know. I'm mixed.
All
I'd say
right.
mixed. How about you? Favorites, one of the favorites.
Yes, I spoiled my thoughts already, but this is one of my favorites. It is not one of the best acted horror films I've ever seen, and I
Video
don't
game
partic
acting.
I don't yeah, I don't even particularly care about the characters that much, but it is like one of the like most vibey, like aesthetically pleasing, gruesome films I've ever seen, and I fucking
Yeah.
love it.
Yeah, there's a lot of talent on the visual front for sure.
Yeah, and it's one of those things that I always talk about on this podcast where I'm like, for me, I will forgive pretty much anything if it looks fucking delightful. Like, you know,
Oh yeah.
I will forgive a lot. And I will even say to the point that the acting isn't good, but it's not bad.
I think it's bad, but you know,
It's
it
not.
could be worse. It could be a lot worse.
Okay, it's bad, but it doesn't distract from the movie for me.
No, it's actually within tone of the movie.
That's
I would
and
say that.
I would say that's more accurate to what I mean. Like, if it's bad, like sure, whatever, it's bad. But like, it doesn't like as I'm watching it, like the dialogue and like the delivery like doesn't distract from the film for me in my experience. This is my second time watching it. I suggest multiple watches as like that Letterboxd review suggested also. It's actually it's quite fun to rewatch, especially if you're showing it to someone who's never seen it before and just watching them lose their fucking minds because like they think it's gonna go one way and then it's just like, oh my God, what is happening?
Yeah, there's a lot of different directions this movie goes in, that's for sure.
I think that they left a couple too many threads left loose, like untied, which sucks because I do think that there were some really cool characters, but because they tried to shove so many characters into this relatively short film, I think it's like an
It's
hour.
clean 90.
Yeah, it's a clean 90, maybe hour 50. But there's so many characters in like a small in a single location. And they try to give everyone kind of like something. I feel like it takes away from that. I feel like they could have taken away a couple of the characters, and I don't think it would have hindered the film at all.
I'm with you on that one. There's definitely a lot. I get that a lot of people have to die to make it like to really show off these fucking creatures, but like, there were too many. There's too many
Yeah,
people that.
there was, yeah. I mean, there's a difference between like fodder characters and then also introducing characters like they're gonna be a character in the film. You know what
That's
I mean?
true. Yeah, I understand trying to build up a character before death, but like, if they're not
Well,
compelling, then they're
okay.
just on screen.
Case in point. What's his face? What's his face? Daniel. No,
Dan
Daniel's the main
no Daniel's
character.
yeah Daniel's Officer
See,
Dewey.
oh, James, the guy from the very beginning of the film.
Yeah, okay,
Like
him.
he
Yeah,
could have died way sooner, and he could have died like in like a more creative, gruesome way. But they're just like, no. He has to give us our exposition dump at risk of losing his hand.
they could have handled that differently for
So,
sure.
and this is just me being nitpicky, and I do want to just get out of the way right now. I freaking like this movie so much. So let's breeze through some questions.
All right. What you got?
Let's see. So we have briefly dabbled in cosmic horror. Thoughts about the genre so
So
far,
far?
if so far. So as a reminder, this so we've covered The Void. The Endless is technically Lovecraftian horror.
Okay.
Google is saying Cabin in the Woods is. I don't agree. Mandy is cosmic horror.
Does the thing count?
Yes.
Okay, the thing
I would
counts.
say The Thing absolutely counts. Event Horizon absolutely counts.
Yeah, definitely. Fire in the sky?
I would argue yes. I would say Fire in the Sky just for that scene alone makes it cosmic horror. which I think it's a common, like, misconception when people say cosmic horror. They think, like, sci-fi horror. But there's, like, an extra unsettlingness to Lovecraftian, like, horror that, I don't know what sets it apart. Another really good one that I absolutely want to cover, and I want to bring Caitlin on for when we do cover it, Annihilation.
Oh, I still haven't seen that movie.
I've heard incredible things. I absolutely want to cover it. But yeah, so that's another one that's very much like cosmic, the unknowable, like just things that are very strange and outside of our realm of understanding.
Yeah, yeah. So with all of that and the selections, I gotta say, cosmic horror, kind of one of the scarier genres.
Ooh, okay.
Like, I think from each one that we've talked about and that we've covered here, there is more of a scare factor to those movies than, I mean, we cover everything. We cover slashers, we've covered found footage, and like there's rule sets and things you kind of get used to. With cosmic horror, there's definitely something like off, and like the fact I think that they're so visually compelling too, really sells like whatever scary thing they're trying to push in front of you, with the exception of maybe Cabin in the Woods, but then that one's just fun. But yeah, I don't know. I gotta say I respect the genre quite a bit. It definitely pushes things. It's not afraid to get graphic, and also, like, you know, it's very effects driven. So when they're good effects, which I think pretty much everyone we've covered has had phenomenal effects, this movie included, it really makes for, you know, even if you're like not into the movie, you can still sit and watch it, I think. And that's with any cosmic horror movie. Like, Event Horizon might not be everybody's cup of tea, but it will send a shiver down your spine during some scenes.
Oh, hell yeah, yeah.
Right? And it doesn't have to be grounded, which I think was something that distinguishes cosmic horror from traditional sci-fi horror movies. Like, there's really no need to be grounded. And I think that's pretty bold, and when they can pull it off, there's a lot of holy shit moments that I think you can't really get in any other genre.
Yeah, it gives you a really good opportunity to get some very, very spooky shit in there. One of the things that I noticed for a lot of the movies that we have covered is there's also a huge, huge emphasis in body horror, which isn't necessarily indicative of cosmic horror, but they just, like, they pair so well, like a fine wine and cheese.
Absolutely.
They complement each other so well. I love it.
In fact, one without body horror, I'd be like, oh, I didn't see any fucking flesh burst.
Right.
None of that shit.
No gore?
Now I gotta go to the internet for my tentacle shit, and that's great.
Great.
I guess.
Here we go. We kind of talked about this already, but yeah. So I'm a huge fan of cosmic horror. That's why I pushed for this movie. I was just like, we gotta talk about this movie.
I'm glad we did.
Yay! So, moving on, so why do you think it's difficult, if not impossible, to make a mainstream successful cosmic horror film? Guillermo del Toro famously tried and failed to recreate a Lovecraft story in a mainstream lens, famously with In the Mountains of Madness.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, like, even with, like, this, like despite it being kind of a simpler cosmic horror movie, I would say that there's pretty hefty themes, and we're all pretty stupid. So, well, you can't really, like, I think a lot of, like, your movies for cosmic horror is going to hinge on some big, broad questions about reality and space and time. And, like there's a lot going on to that I think it's not the most billable narrative if that has to be put into play. And also, you know, the more graphic, the less money you can really make, unless it's driven by that. And there's a lot of film genres that are like, no, we're the graphic ones, and everybody knows that. Stuff with space, you know, we know about Star Wars. Stuff with dimensions, we know about, like, you know,
Stargate.
Marvel shit. Yeah. So it's not like those particular avenues have been, like, mainstreamified in a way that when you shit on them, and make them bloody and philosophical, I think it's hard for you or the studio to give you money for that. that's a lot.
No, I think that is a perfectly accurate description. It took the words right out of my mouth.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, I don't have much to add on that, actually. But yes, I wholeheartedly agree. Which, and also, just in addition, it sucks, too, because I think they're missing out. Because I think that there's a lot of interesting questions to ask with stories like these.
But, oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, they make for good TV shows. You'll see this shit in TV all the goddamn time. But I think if you want people to go to a theater and, like, see pregnant ladies fucking belly explode with tentacle monster and shit.
Right.
Not a lot of people. You're not going to get, like, big, big numbers with that one, unfortunately.
No. This would not do well in a proper mainstream release, like, theatrical release.
You can't put it next to the Billboard kiosk with, like, a Pixar movie.
No, it's just not gonna work. It would not work for a movie or for a drive-in theater where, like, one side is playing a Pixar movie and the other side is playing, like, the movie for adults. I don't
know. Right?
You've been to drive-in, like...
Oh, yeah, okay. I know.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can't, like, one... They both have space, right? Like, yeah, but one's Lightyear, man. Jesus.
One's Lightyear. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, yeah. That's my thoughts on that. Let's see. I did not think of a fun question.
Oh, I mean, but we had a fun time anyways, right?
Maybe the fun question was the laughs we made along the way.
Yeah. That I think so. It's rarely ever do I get to recite Eminem so prominently in the...
And so seriously, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, with the vicious murder of a pregnant woman.
So earnestly.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So and the Klan jokes, too. Right. This is really a good summation of what we're all about.
God. Anyone who's listening for the first time, hello. We're not normally this crass, but, you know, we're having a week, so.
Yeah, it's honestly too much secret sauce.
We're lost in the secret sauce.
Lost in the sauce.
Yeah, I kind of have a fun question, but it's not really formulating in my brain right, so we're just going to skip it. Yeah. Normally we have fun questions. Listen to other episodes for that. How would you rate this movie out of 5 mysterious triangles?
Oh, shit. This is such a hard one to rate, honestly, because I don't really dig it that much, but, like, and there's a lot of flaws.
No, speak from your heart.
I think, though, like, it's worth watching at least once, because it really is, like, gruesome as fuck. I'm gonna give it a... 2.75 sounds fine.
That
sounds
good to me. Wow, okay, yeah, I was expecting a 2.5 from you. All right, tight. I'm gonna give this a 3.75.
Okay, full point ahead. Yeah. This is nice.
Yeah.
Nice. Honestly, I can definitely see if this is your bag, baby, 3.75 would be it. Like, yes. That's for sure.
No, this is absolutely, if you like cosmic horror, if you like body horror, if you can look beyond the shitty acting, it is a phenomenal fucking movie.
Yeah.
And a 3.75 is very complimentary for me.
Yeah, Alex normally rates it way lower, so that's actually very true. I'm usually very forgiving. For this one, I couldn't say 3. I don't know
why.
I
understand why. And also, like, I had to text you a couple times when I was just like, there are needles in this movie. I am sorry.
Oh, yeah. I totally looked away. That's another thing that fucks me up is the needle shots.
Yeah.
And they're longer shots, too. I'm like, why? What? Switch time? Where's my switch?
No, there's, like, prolonged shots of needles. And I was just like, fuck, Anthony's going to hate this.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had to make a mental note to be like, oh, gotta let Anthony know, gotta warn him about the needles.
I'm all crying and sobbing in the corner. Alex, what have you done?
What the fuck? Anyway, do you want to call it here?
Yeah, let's call it. Let's go.
All right. Thank you so much, everyone, for joining us. That was The Void from 2016.
Mm-hmm.
Next week, we're on break.
Yeah. Yeah, we're going to take a week off.
A week off to go spend time with our families.
I know.
Have a holiday.
Of course.
No, seriously, though, we're going to go, like, eat a bunch of food and not think about this for a little bit.
Yeah. We need our time too. We had a really bitchin' fucking October.
Holy shit! Thank you so much, everyone who joined us for October and November. The last week of November, we are coming back with something fun.
It's gonna be another creature feature, but it's gonna be an interesting one. Very nostalgic, and we're gonna have a guest. So.
Ooh, it's gonna be a fun time. And we are also taking another short break in December as well.
Again, to spend time with our families.
To spend time with our families, because we are shells of our former selves, and we have to, you know, regenerate one way or another.
Right? Season 1 us would have just powered through, but season 4 or season 5 us is like, they get it.
It's like, we're just like, no. We can't keep burning the candle at both ends. So thank you so much, everyone, for your patience, and just an update on our schedule. So that's what we have going on for the next couple months, gearing up for our 200th episode.
That's right.
This is January. Episode 195, by the way. That is absolutely insane. We have some absolutely bonkers announcements that are going to be coming up soon. Very excited for that. So stay tuned for that. So thank you everyone for joining us. If you like what you heard, please make sure you subscribe wherever you're listening, and then you write a review if you're listening on iTunes, and you leave a rating if you're listening on iTunes and or Spotify. It does help other people find the podcast, and we just love looking at that juicy, juicy rating. So
keep them 5, baby. Let's go.
Woo! And then if you want to stay up to date on the latest and greatest on all of our podcast shenanigans, you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are on Facebook and Twitter at Horror People Pod, and we are on Instagram at Horrible People's Podcast. That is HORROR BLE People's Podcast. You can find Anthony on Twitter and Instagram at Hyrulean Hustler, and you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Ghost Coffee Shop. Who knows how much longer either of us will be on Twitter, because it has become a total hellscape.
Yeah, no, we're gonna be verified, Alex, don't worry.
Yeah, we're officially verified on
we're like $8, baby, let's go.
Yeah, right. So in the meantime, thank you so much everyone for listening, and always reroute to the more popular hospital.
Yeah, and then watch out for our upcoming production of Clan Games.
All right, bye, guys.
See ya.